This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Discontented, like a nightingale without a song to sing. Why should I have spring fever when it isn't even spring?
Happy spring equinox. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and actually, it might as well still be winter here in Madison, Wisconsin, on this first full weekend of spring, where we all have cabin fever.
I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. That song, It Might As Well Be Spring, which was sung by Rosemary Clooney, is still appropriate for Free Thought Radio because that song was written by an atheist, Richard Rodgers.
And Rosemary Clooney's nephew, the actor George Clooney, is also a free thinker, so there's another connection.
Well, we're just full of connections on Free Thought Radio, aren't we? Later, we'll play two more songs about spring written by famous free thinking songwriters. Today is the March 22nd, 2014 broadcast of Free Thought Radio, broadcast from Madison, Wisconsin, where the Freedom From Religion Foundation has our national headquarters. Free Thought Radio also broadcasts in a number of other states. You might be listening to us in New York or in California, up in the Central California area, in Michigan or in Central Missouri, or right just about in the middle of Texas where College Station is. And of course, you can hear us throughout the entire natural cosmos as a podcast.
And speaking of connections, we'll also play one of Elton John's free-thinking songs in honor of Elton John's upcoming birthday this week. And we should always add, Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we're a national state church watchdog and the largest membership association of freethinkers, that means atheists, agnostics, other skeptics, in North America.
Our guest on today's show will be Marcy Hamilton. She's the prominent attorney who wrote FFRF's amicus brief in the Hobby Lobby case before the Supreme Court, which is the arguments are coming up next week. She also wrote the book, God versus the Gavel.
The Supreme Court will be hearing Sebelius versus Hobby Lobby this Tuesday, March 26th, and Marcy Hamilton is going to talk with us about this very significant case in which a business is arguing that it can decide what form of contraception its women workers may use by virtue of what its health coverage can accommodate. And so that's a very important, probably the most important case before the Supreme Court, and certainly on Establishment Clause law this year.
But first, in more Free Thought State Church news, we have a tale of three cities. The First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution mandates that there should be a separation between state and church, and that the government at every level, including at the municipal level, be completely neutral with regard to religion.
And last week we told you about our letter of complaint to the mayor of the city of Green Bay, Jim Schmidt, who officially invited the Pope to visit Green Bay using city letterhead, signing it, "Your servant in Christ," and for the purpose of making a pilgrimage to a Virgin Mary shrine outside Green Bay with very miraculous and supernatural powers, incidentally.
Here's ABC2 in Green Bay on Pope Francis' one-year anniversary as the Pope.
Pope Francis marks his one-year anniversary as a pontiff with a simple request, asking his followers to pray for him.
Pope Francis's anniversary comes as a petition started by Mayor Jim Schmidt to invite him to Green Bay is gaining momentum.
I would be delighted if the Holy Father came to Green Bay.
Have a mass at Lambeau Field.
The Freedom From Religion Foundation, based in Madison, is protesting the invitation. There's no word if the Vatican has responded. In Green Bay, Kristen Allen, Action 2 News.
That story makes it sound like the Pope needs to respond to us, not just to the city of Green Bay.
Well, and I think he should, because if he expects all of us Americans to pay millions of dollars to support his visit, he ought to tell us why his own church, his own God, is too cheap to pay his own way. And also, by the way, FFRF protested invitations from Speaker of the House Boehner and Minority Leader Pelosi, both Catholic politicians, inviting the Pope to address Congress next year if he even comes to the United States, which isn't even confirmed. And I would say Catholic politicians have no shame. And I wrote a blog saying that Congress needs to hear from the Pope as much as Boehner needs another visit to a tanning booth.
Okay, from a city up in the north to a city down in the south. Last week, we told you about FFRF's letter of complaint to the city of Birmingham, Alabama, about their police chief, Roper. He's a Christian minister, and he's mixing religion and government. Among other things, he conducts this monthly Christian prayer walk through parts of Birmingham, asking Jesus to protect the public from the mostly Christian criminals who have made Birmingham one of the most violent cities in the country.
Here's a story from CBS 42, Birmingham, the day before the March 15th prayer walk.
Well, tomorrow morning, Prayer Force United will host a walk to pray for the city of Birmingham. Police Chief A.C. Roper has been active in these monthly rallies for several years now, but a complaint from within the police department has prompted a Washington watchdog group to speak out against the way the chief participates. The Freedom From Religion Foundation argues that leading prayers as the chief of police is unconstitutional.
When Police Chief Roper appears at these events, he uses his official title. He's introduced with his official title. He's often wearing Birmingham Police Department shirt or has his badge. He preaches as the police chief. He's not appearing as A.C. Roper, citizen of Birmingham. If he were doing that, we wouldn't have a problem.
Well, we reached out to Chief Roper's office. So far, he has declined to comment on the issue.
One of those voices was FFRF staff attorney Andrew Seidel, who wrote that letter on behalf of FFRF to the city. And by the way, the Freedom From Religion Foundation is a Wisconsin watchdog group, not a Washington watchdog group.
Well, the next day during the prayer walk, CBS was able to interview Police Chief Roper.
With prayer as their weapon and Birmingham Police Chief A.C. Roper as their leader, Prayer Force United hit the streets of Birmingham's west side.
Well, the police department can't be successful by itself. But you have people who are willing to come out on a Saturday morning and walk through these neighborhoods, showing that they care about what's occurring. It's important for us.
For years, Roper has used prayer as part of his arsenal for fighting crime in the Magic City, but that work hasn't come without criticism. The Freedom From Religion Foundation is holding up Roper as their latest example of blurring the lines between church and state as a police chief, openly promoting Christianity.
This is still America. We have the freedom of speech, we have the freedom of religion, we have the freedom of assembly, and it applies for everybody.
Prayer Force United was established in 2008. Churches, ministers, and citizens from all over the city walk the streets and pray for a decrease in crime.
You may have seen the recent report that in 2013, the city of Birmingham has the lowest crime rate in the past 30 years.
They will likely tell you they believe that along with police presence and the right leadership, a little prayer doesn't hurt. In Birmingham, Tiffany Westry, CBS 42 News.
Now that was down south. Now back north to another renegade city, much further north in Green Bay even, to the little town of Sand Point, Idaho.
Way up in the panhandle by Canada.
The city of Sand Point has had a Ten Commandments monument in their city park for about four decades. Annie Laurie, last November you sent the city a letter of complaint asking that that statue be moved to private property. We haven't actually heard from the city in the meantime, but news reports indicate they're considering removing the monument. And when the people in that town learned of that possibility, they became outraged. Annie Laurie, you were interviewed last week by KHQ6 out of Coeur d'Alene about this issue.
NFL News out of North Idaho tonight, and a longtime monument in a Sandpoint park could be moved, and some people who live in town are not happy about it. The monument lists the Ten Commandments because it's religious in nature. It might be moved off public property.
This morning, the city of Sandpoint posted this statement on their website, saying the city received a letter from the Freedom From Religion Foundation out of Wisconsin, asking for the removal of the Ten Commandments statue from Farman Park. That statue was donated by the Fraternal Order of the Eagles in 1972, and while the city said they don't plan to immediately remove the statue, they're going to work with the Eagles to find a new location. I spoke with the co-president of the FFRF about why they want that statue removed from the public park.
We live in a secular republic, and under our First Amendment, you can have as many gods as you like, or any god that you like, or no god at all. And it is not the business of the government to dictate what god you should believe in or disbelieve.
But in Sandpoint, people are frustrated, including the Eagles. They gave me this statement, quote, "We are not happy about it at all. We don't feel that some organization in Wisconsin can take this. What was this country built on? Freedom of religion, freedom of speech."
I personally feel like religious liberties are being more and more encroached upon.
Reporting live tonight from Coeur d'Alene, Gabe Cohen, KHQ Local News.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. This is Free Thought Radio. In a few minutes, we'll talk with Marcy Hamilton. Now here's another Ode to Spring by Richard Rodgers, sung by Ella Fitzgerald.
As if to say spring will be a little slow to start, a little slow. That music it made in my heart. Yes, time heals all things, so I needn't cling to this fear. It's merely that spring will be
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And this week is the birthday of another free-thinking songwriter, Elton John. He was born March the 25th, 1947. Elton John rejects organized religion largely because, as he says, religion has always tried to turn hatred toward gay people. Religion promotes the hatred and spite against gays. Of course, with more than 200 million album sales over his four-decade-plus career, Elton John is one of the world's most well-known and well-loved musical talents and humanitarians. Elton John said, "From my point of view, I would ban religion completely. The reality is that organized religion doesn't seem to work. It turns people into hateful lemmings, and it's not really compassionate."
And so in his 2001 song, "This Train Don't Stop Here Anymore," Elton John said, "I don't believe in miracles anymore, and I don't believe I ever did for sure."
You may not believe it, but I don't believe in miracles anymore. And when I think about it, I don't believe I ever did for sure. All the things I've said in songs, all the purple rose you bought from me. Reality's just black and white, the sentimental things that write never meant that much to me. I used to be the main express, all steam and whistles heading west, picking up my pain from door to door, riding on the storyline, furnace burning overtime. But this train don't stop, this train don't stop, this train don't stop there.
And that's Elton John. Reality's just black and white, no magic. If you're a freethinker, then your train don't stop at superstition anymore.
You can learn about more famous freethinkers at FFRF's Free Thought of the Day website page at ffrf.org/day. And speaking of famous freethinking songwriters, of course, there's the great Yip Harburg, 75th anniversary of Wizard of Oz this year. He wrote Somewhere Over the Rainbow and so much other beautiful music. And we're going to play a song he wrote, the words to One Sweet Morning. And it's a hymn to peace from
1969.
Music by Earl Robeson. I think it's 1949, Dan. And this is One Sweet Morning.
Out of the fallen leaves, the autumn world over. Out of the shattered rose that will smile no more. Out of the embers of blossoms and ashes of clover, spring will bloom one sweet morning. One sweet morning, the rose will rise to wake the heart and make it wise. Out of the fallen lads, the summer world over. Out of their flags plowed under a distant shore. Out of the dreams in their bones buried under the clover. Peace will come one sweet morning. One sweet morning, the rose will rise to wake the heart and make it wise. This is the cry of life, the winter world over. Sing me no sad amen, but a bright encore. For out of the flags and the bones buried under the clover, spring will bloom. Peace will come one sweet morning. One sweet morning.
Spring will come. Peace will bloom one sweet morning. And we are sure ready for spring around here in Wisconsin. And that was Dan, my co-host, singing the beautiful and haunting Yip Harburg song, One Sweet Morning, available on FFRF's latest music CD, Adrift on a Star. Adrift on a Star is the title song, which was also taken from a Yip Harburg song, music by Dan Barker.
Yip Harburg was the songwriter who wrote the most famous movie theme of all time, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. He also wrote It's Only a Paper Moon and April in Paris and Finian's Rainbow. He was an outspoken non-believer and secular humanist.
And next week, during the 75th anniversary year of Wizard of Oz, we are going to have the pleasure of talking again with Yip Harburg's son, Ernie Harburg, who runs the Yip Harburg Foundation, is a retired scientist, and we're going to talk about his dad's life and legacy and what's going on in the 75th anniversary year of Wizard of Oz. Ernie's life as well, on what he's been doing to keep alive the memory of his father's music. And we also have reprinted Rhymes for the Irreverent, which is a wonderful book of irreverent rhymes by Yip Harburg, and you can find that at FFRF.org.
And here's some more Elton John music, Benny and the Jets. I'm Dan Barker. with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned to hear our interview in the next segment with the prominent attorney, Marcy Hamilton.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker, and we have a pinch-hitting engineer today. Mike Pilch is sitting in for Dave McCann, and it's appropriate to say he's a pinch hitter because he was a college baseball player. So thanks, Mike, for doing a great job today.
And Mike doesn't have a mic, so he can't say anything. But I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are very delighted at last to have on the phone with us from New York City a prominent attorney, activist, Marcy Hamilton, who's going to actually accept FFRF's Free Thought Heron Award at our national convention in October in L.A., and she holds the Paul R. Vercuhl Chair in Public Law at the Benjamin Cardozo School of Law, Yeshiva University, and has been a passionate defense attorney, passionately in defense of child sex abuse victims from religious organizations, and has taken a lot of flack for that, is a leading national expert on child sex abuse statutes of limitations, and maintains the cutting-edge website www.solreform.com, which contains up-to-date information on this social movement in all 50 states. So that's a very good public service. But she's also the author of the book God Versus the Gavel, Religion and the Rule of Law, and Justice Denied, What America Must Do to Protect Its Children. And she's also the author of FFRF's Hobby Lobby amicus brief before the Supreme Court. There are oral arguments this Tuesday. So welcome to the show, Marcy.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we're really glad to finally have you on the show. And do you want to talk a little bit about your background in all of this? We didn't touch on the land use background, your constitutional law background, but that became very important in dealing with the Hobby Lobby amicus brief.
Right. The short version is that I litigated the Religious Freedom Restoration Act for the tiny town of the city of Boerne, Texas, in 1997, and the court declared the law unconstitutional. And that law, RFRA, was reenacted in 2000, and that's the law that's at stake in the Hobby Lobby case.
So, and Marcy, did you do that argument yourself before the Supreme Court?
I did. That was my first case.
Wow. Really exciting. And you won.
And we won.
How many people can say that in an Establishment Clause law these days?
it's a nice thing to be able to say, but I was blessed because I'd clerked for Justice O'Connor not that long before, and I was very familiar with the court. And I had a leg up because I understood the court's doctrine in a lot of the areas we were talking about.
But that just affected the state of Texas, is that right? That doesn't affect federal law? RFRA at the federal level?
That's the odd thing about RFRA. The decision actually held that RFRA was unconstitutional under multiple theories. It was actually an attempt through simple majority vote in Congress to amend the Constitution. And the court reached that holding, and they said it was a violation of separation of powers, and it was a states' rights problem. But what happened is the religious activists went back to Congress and said, oh, this law is just about states because it involved a local law, and so you really should reenact something just like it. And so they went back and they reenacted in 2000 RFRA as applied just to federal law. And so that's the law that we're dealing with on Tuesday.
RFRA is Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Can you explain that very briefly?
The Religious Freedom Restoration Act is something that was drafted by the head of the Homeschool Legal Defense Fund, which is Michael Ferris and Mark Stern of the American Jewish Congress. And what they were doing was they were concocting a standard for religious liberty that would be more protective of religion than at any time in United States history. And they managed to pull the wool over the eyes of members of Congress that this was somehow restoring the prior doctrine. That's not true. It was a new doctrine. It's a new most protection for religion in the history of the United States. They succeeded, and that's what RFRA is.
It's an end run around the Supreme Court, then.
Yes, exactly. It's really quite the insult to the Supreme Court, because they didn't just say they didn't like the result in the Employment Division versus Smith case in 1990. They also then just picked and chose between the court's doctrines what they thought they would like the best, and then declared that that was restoring what they liked better, and got Congress to buy into it.
Now, all that sounds just a tiny bit dry, but what's really at stake is this big case before the Supreme Court, Sebelius versus Hobby Lobby, that the Supreme Court is hearing on Tuesday. How does RFRA enter into that, Marcy? And I should add that your wonderful brief has gotten the most attention of all of the amicus briefs before the Supreme Court, New York Times mentioned several times, as significant because you're the one who argues RFRA is unconstitutional.
Well, I was originally I was going to sit this one out, and I was but I was intrigued when I heard from you all, and I thought, you know, someone needs to say something about the 800-pound elephant in the room. And it is that RFRA is unconstitutional. So I was very pleased to be brought into the case with the FFRF and SNAP and CHILD and other organizations to remind the court that they held it was unconstitutional in 1997, and they needed to think about that really carefully. But it sounds dry, and that's the problem with this statute. It sounds dry, but what it does is it gives every religious believer against federal law in the United States the capacity to do things that they could have never done before. They get to break the law. And so on Tuesday, what the court's going to hear is whether a huge company, Hobby Lobby, with $3.3 billion in annual revenues, can use the religion of its owners and its board members and its shareholders as a justification for not abiding by the contraception mandate in the Affordable Care Act.
So the owner of Hobby Lobby has very specific likes and dislikes about birth control,
yes,
as we know. And even though, you know, he doesn't like the pill, and even though the College of Obstetrics and Gynecology are on record saying his science is medieval, he insists that he has the right to say what kind of birth control his women employees can choose under, you know, as a preventive care, required preventive care under the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. And boy, is this is the big case of the season, don't you think?
It is. There's no question. And partly because there is such a hard push by the groups that oppose either all contraception, some contraception, emergency contraception, or abortion, those religious groups are trying to use RFRA as a wedge to get around the requirements of the Affordable Care Act. And so it's highly politically charged, and it shows RFRA in its true glory, which is that it gives religious believers an opening to make claims that they never would have been able to make before.
Does a corporation have religious rights?
You know, some religious corporations, you know, some religious groups are incorporated.
Yes,
so under Title VII, which is our civil rights law, we do have protection for religious groups that are corporate. But a non-religious corporation, which is exactly what Hobby Lobby is, it's just for profit. They're not, you know, furthering their religious mission by making more profit. They're just making profit by selling hobby arts and crafts. And so the answer is no. And if you look at the RFRA legislative history, there was some concern about just how far-reaching was this going to be. And on both sides of the issue, both Democrats and Republicans said, look, a company like Exxon or General Motors, a large corporation, they are not religious by their nature. And if they're not religious by their nature, neither is Hobby Lobby. It's the 135th ranked company in the country. And so unless the court's going to turn corporations law on its head, I think they've got to find it's not a religious actor.
Well, because if somebody buys Hobby Lobby, the corporation, if they sell, you know, what are the religious views of the new owners? Do the religious views transfer with the company? It seems like
Right. And there was a wonderful amicus brief written by corporation and criminal law professors in which they said, look, the theory here that the Hobby Lobby folks and Conestoga Wood are making is that their values pass through a corporation. But that's just not corporations law. That's not the way corporations are set up. In fact, corporations are supposed to be distinct from the individuals in order to reduce their liabilities.
That's right. That's why you incorporate.
Right. So you can't have it both ways. You can't reduce your liabilities, but also make the corporation the reflection of your personal religious self.
Now, I think that Dan has been waiting a long time to make a pun, right?
Well, yeah, it's a bad fourth grade pun that the Hobby Lobby is really crafty in what they're doing.
Craft store, for those of you who don't know. Now, we are going to come back in a minute. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor talking with Marcy Hamilton, and she's also a visiting professor at Princeton, so many other universities, and has written a column for a decade on constitutional issues at finelaw.com, and now she writes a bimonthly column for www.justia.com, so you can look up that way. But we'll be back in a minute to talk more with Marcy Hamilton.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we're continuing our talk with Marcy Hamilton, the prominent attorney who has won a case before the United States Supreme Court, who wrote the amicus brief for the Freedom From Religion Foundation and other groups challenging the Hobby Lobby case, which will be heard next week. She's the author of the book God Versus the Gavel, which came out, I think, in 2005, and she was on Jon Stewart's show when that came out, and now there's a new version of the book coming out really soon. She can tell us about that, God Versus the Gavel. Well, she'll tell us the new subtitle of it, in which case we hope she'll win not just the silver medal from Forward Magazine Political Science Book of the Year, but the gold medal for that book. So welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Marcy.
Thanks for having me again.
And tell us again about the new book or the new version of the book.
Right. I published God Versus the Gavel about 10 years ago, and in the last 10 years, so much has happened that I decided I needed to do a new update. And so I'll be publishing in about a month in the Kindle version, God Versus the Gavel, The Perils of Extreme Religious Liberty. And over half of the book is now new material, and additional material about Hobby Lobby and all these other issues that have popped up. The hard copy will come out next fall, which will include a full discussion of the Hobby Lobby decision once it comes out.
And just in time for people to get an autographed copy at the upcoming National FFRF convention, where our guest Marcy Hamilton is going to accept our Free Thought Heroine Award. So that'll be a lot of fun.
In Los Angeles. In October.
And Marcy, also, you have a new blog.
I do. With Professor Leslie Griffin, a dear friend of mine who's a wonderful law and religion scholar, and we've just launched the imaginatively named Hamilton-Griffin.com. And we'll have, we're posting materials about the Hobby Lobby case coming up, but also we've already posted some really interesting ideas that we've had, and we'll be doing blog posts every week.
Now, I probably think you probably don't want to prognosticate, but if the Supreme Court agrees with Hobby Lobby, we're in real trouble. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, if the court were to agree with Hobby Lobby, and it has a lot of hurdles to scale before that happens, but if they were to win, it would truly turn both corporations law and religious liberty into a free-for-all. It would be the Pandora's box of all time, because right now, the vast majority of all for-profit corporations are not being treated like religious actors. And suddenly, it would mean that they can now insert their religious beliefs in the way that they operate. So arguing to exclude customers based on their faith, or arguing to shape all of their benefit plans for their employees according to their faith, it would be a very scary development. And I hope the court will have the good sense to find at least one of their arguments not persuasive, and then Hobby Lobby will lose.
Because what about the religious rights of the employees?
The freedom of conscience.
Yeah.
And also, the employees have rights under Title VII not to be discriminated against based on gender and religion. So what we have here is a head-to-head conflict between an employer claiming that they have religious rights, which they would have never had before, but employees who have long-time recognized federal civil rights not to be discriminated against. And we're talking about a lot of employees. Hobby Lobby is, as I said, $3.3 billion a year in revenue. And they have 23,000 employees in 600 stores.
Now, you know, Citizens United was this decision saying that a corporation is a person. And so what Hobby Lobby is now arguing is one step up from that, that a corporation can have a soul and has rights under the free exercise, right? I guess I am very concerned about it. And
well, I think that the issue in Citizens United was really about full information in the market, in the political marketplace, and making sure that all ideas get out there for the marketplace of ideas. And so there was a reason that the court had. I mean, many of us disagree with it, but at least there is a limiting principle here. In Citizens United, there's no public justification, no public benefit to giving for-profit corporations religious identities. There's just none. And so, if there's no public benefit, there's no constitutional principle that's a benefit. There's just no reason to expand the rights of entities in this way. And part of what's going on here is that they won in the Tenth Circuit. But you know, the Tenth Circuit is a circuit that's very friendly to religious claims, and I think they're going to have a much harder time at the court.
Well, they convinced the judges on the circuit court, at least, of their arguments.
But
they did. But as I said, that circuit court is very willing to take very seriously religious liberty arguments, but I think they misread the statute. They also didn't fully understand exactly the ramifications of what they were arguing. And the good thing is that the Supreme Court is that they accept any and all amicus briefs. So The court has 88 amicus briefs, with many that are first-rate legal analyses explaining to the court that if they go with Hobby Lobby and Conestoga Woods, they are going to radically change many, many laws in the country.
And at the top of those briefs is the one you wrote for us.
And it has been fun to see all the discussion about it. And I think that at the very least, I hope that the justices are sensitized to that there are constitutional issues, and they need to read RFRA narrowly at least.
And of course, it's there are two cases going up. They accepted two, and Conestoga, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, the appeals court ruled against the corporation that said it had religious rights.
Yeah,
so you have
the Third
a conflict.
Circuit wrote a very good opinion, and I think it'll be good guidance for the court. You know, one of the things that could happen is the court doesn't get five votes for any theory, so we won't really have full guidance, but I hope they'll do everything they can to avoid that it's not a totally splintered court.
Like a plurality decision.
Yep.
Oh, and those are ugly.
Yes, they are.
Well, so if the court agreed with Hobby Lobby, then Brewer shouldn't have vetoed that bill in Arizona recently.
Well, if the court agrees with Hobby Lobby, the issue in Arizona is different because Hobby Lobby is being brought up against a government. The government is telling them that they must provide contraception to their female employees. The issue in Arizona was twofold. One, do for-profit corporations and companies have the ability to be religious? But the second big step is that they were arguing that you could have religious liberty rights between two private individuals so that there would be no government involvement, so that a business owner could look across the bakery counter and just eyeball a customer and say, I'm not doing business with you because you violate my religious beliefs. That is a huge leap from the ordinary RFRA.
The Civil Rights Act.
Yeah. Yes, it's a violation of public accommodations laws, and it's the Jim Crow universe. And so that was the move. The notion that you would now have disputes using RFRA between two private entities, that was part of what was so ugly about the Arizona proposal.
Well, we're out of time, and I'm so sorry because it's been fascinating. Marcy Hamilton, go to the blog. It's Hamilton Leslie blog.
Go Hamilton-Griffin.
Griffin, excuse me. Go to FFRF.org to read Marcy Hamilton's amicus brief and the Hobby Lobby case. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
See you in October.
And thank you, Mike. Thank you, Mike Pilch, for pinch hitting today for Dave and Buzz Kemper for announcing. Learn all you can learn about Free Thought Radio at FFRF.org/news/radio.
Go to FFRF.org to join us, to ask for more information, to ask for a free sample of our newspaper Free Thought Today. Tune in next week for our interview with Ernie Harburg about Yip Harburg, the atheist lyricist.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday